This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about COVID-19 and business interruption insurance. I am joined by barrister Mr. Shailesh Mehta from Red Lion Chambers in London. Shailesh is a senior barrister who prosecutes and defends in high-profile, complex and law-defining cases, and he regularly advises government agencies at a national level. Shailesh also lectures other lawyers and judges on aspects of law in the UK and abroad, and he is a founding member of the Bar Human Rights Committee. Thank you so much for joining me, Shailesh.
It's my pleasure.
This morning, so business interruption insurance. Okay, so just a tiny little bit about what we're going to be discussing today. What do we mean by business interruption insurance, Shailesh? Can we just tell our listeners what we're talking about specifically here, please?
The starting point to understand what business interruption insurance is, the starting point is if you've got a business and you're likely to be making money from it, you want to make sure that the income that you get from that business is protected. And there are a number of ways that you can protect that income. Getting insurance to protect that income is a standard and usual way that businesses protect themselves in a number of ways. And therefore, we're going to be talking about insurance in relation to business interruption as a result of COVID-19, largely because of the government requirement that some businesses, in fact the majority of businesses, should close.
Yeah.
And that only a tiny fraction of businesses in the UK were allowed to remain open. And so of those businesses that were required to close, or through circumstances felt obliged to close, they were busily looking at their insurance policies to see if their insurance policy allowed them to claim for the loss or the reduction in income as a result of the COVID-19 restrictions.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it was reported that in April 2020, obviously the lockdown was March the 23rd, that a quarter of UK businesses had temporarily closed or paused for trading. And you're talking from there right through to June. There were some businesses that were allowed to open, and then July there were other businesses, and then, you know, hospitality. And some areas of sort of the arts businesses have not been able to reopen and are massively, massively suffering. I mean, Britain's high streets are battling to recover, I think, from the impact of the pandemic. And well-known retailers are in dire straits. So let alone the sort of the smaller man, the independent business or the, you know, the small chain that's not a big conglomerate or a brand. And last week, the Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced a number of new measures to curb the coronavirus, saying, you know, including telling people to still work from home. So business interruption is going to, I think, the crusts of it are still yet to come massively.
The interruption came in stages. And so it seems like a distant memory now, but December of last year is when we first learned, and the World Health Organization first learned from China that there was this new strain of SARS in Wuhan. And then the WHO informed the rest of the world that they're keeping an eye on it. And of course, as early as January in this country, our leaders were telling us about the concern, the fact that they're watching developments in Wuhan. And so there was a slow step-by-step increment to February, when the Prime Minister was on the TV saying that he's now considering, and the Cabinet is considering, restrictions. And so with each step that was taken, which is each incremental step, businesses were reacting.
Yeah.
All the way up until the end of March, 16th or the 26th of March, depending on which date one looks at, when the regulations came in and forbade businesses from continuing, made it a criminal offence for the majority of businesses to carry on.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, it, like you say, it was interesting because I was looking at some statistics of how did this all unfold? How many numbers of people, what were the numbers of people that were being infected and then the deaths that were happening as a result? And it does, as you say, seem like a really distant memory, but it's not actually that long ago at all. And in respect to business interruption insurance, on the 15th of September this year, obviously, there was a test case in the High Court and relating to the COVID-19 business interruption insurance. Let's talk a bit about the background to that case, Salish, because I just want to say before that that what has become apparent to most business owners is that their business insurance, their policy, is not paying out in most cases for business interruption, meaning your loss of earnings or any damages to your income and turnover that you've had as a result of the government lockdown and as a result of COVID. I mean, some businesses have been able to remain open, but business is just not what it used to be. Let's talk about why this test case come about and what the background of it was, please.
Well, in the lead up to the regulations that came into force, stopping a number of businesses from running, of course, businesses were panicking because they foresaw that they would have zero income, but their liabilities would continue. So, of course, many businesses were looking at their insurance policy. They were contacting their insurance brokers and the insurance company, asking the simple question, are we covered? Now, in the ordinary course of events, one would expect that the range of insurance companies, particularly the large ones, who cover for business interruption to act quickly and rapidly, because the insurance companies know almost as well as the businesses themselves that each day, each week matters when your turnover suddenly stops. The difficulty here, to be fair to the insurance companies, is they were flooded with these queries and also with claims. And if they responded in a positive way to these claims and paid out, they would be losing billions of pounds. And therefore, one can understand why the insurance companies were hesitant and reluctant to start making payments, particularly when these companies, the insurance companies, believed they had a valid legal argument against these claims.
I have to say, Salish, you know, and absolutely, you're going to elaborate on that, but, you know, I'm astonished that insurance companies have not been held liable. And I know, as the expert, we will piecemeal this out, but let's carry on. Yeah.
And so there was this juxtaposition between legitimate claims from businesses or legitimate expectation that the businesses would get paid out for interruption of their turnover in their business, and the insurance's legitimate claim to have it tested in court. Of course, the downside was that as a result, there was going to be a huge delay, particularly as the courts were working much more slowly than expected because of COVID restrictions. The courts were only picking and choosing the most important cases. And so what does one do in that situation where businesses are being threatened with closure if they don't get paid very quickly, and insurance companies want to test out the law in court, and it could take years? And so the natural way to deal with that sort of difficulty is the court reacted quickly as a result of a number of claims, and the Financial Conduct Authority, which supervises insurance companies, decided to take over the actions of a limited number of these claims, a representative number, and the insurers themselves put forward a limited number of their big companies with standard clauses. And both parties got together, and with the assistance of the court, it was decided that there would be a fast tracking of this case, so that the maximum number of businesses, the maximum number of questions could be answered in a very short period of time. And so a high court judge was put in charge. A Court of Appeal judge, Lord Justice Flow, was also brought into the case. and it resulted in June of this year with the start of this test case, and the hearings, of course, was in August and September, and the result was in September. That is extremely fast by any standard for a case this huge and this complex.
Well, I mean, I think there's absolutely no question of the importance that actually rests on such a case and such results, because, as you quite rightly pointed out, whilst the lawyers and the legal system is trying to work out where do the insurance companies sit at times like this, businesses are folding. People are not able to sustain the outgoings. And yes, there has probably been in some cases where landlords will say, well, we can defer your rent or other things. I mean, it's not just about rent. It's the expenditure of a whole, you know, having a business and running it. And yet the
in the last few months, as you're probably aware, I've been advising a number of small businesses on how they can at least mitigate their expenditure.
And their losses, yeah.
By talking to the landlord, by pleading with the cleaners and other...
suppliers. I mean, suppliers is another big one, because people, more often than not, are contractually bound to be buying a certain amount of stock, or have had a certain amount of stock that have just had to go into the bin. The front doors are not open for business. Okay, furlough was there to assist, but that's also coming to an end. But most businesses have felt the financial damage to what's going on. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why this case is so important. And I mean, who should be aware of its outcome, Salish? Who should be really looking out to what's going on with this test case that happened in the High Court?
Every single business, whether it's a company or a partnership or self-employed small business who has insurance, should be looking out at this case, because the first thing that the person needs to do or the business needs to do is to check their policy. It may be that, in fact, their policy does not cover for business interruption at all. In fact, quite a few policies don't cover for business interruption. If that's so, then I'm afraid you have no recourse to the insurance company. If you do have a business insurance, a business interruption clause in your insurance policy, then you're in the game. It doesn't necessarily mean that you've won, but it means that you then need to look at the outcome of this High Court case.
Yes, I think one of the things when we were looking at business interruption insurance for some clients was the fact that the government has ordered the closure of businesses because of a disease. And what insurance companies, and really putting it very plainly, because I'm sure they're saying a lot more than just this, were saying is that disease is not covered, infectious disease is not covered in the policy. Therefore, no matter what effect it's had, you might not be covered. And I mean, we've certainly had sight of some policies that have said if there is an infectious disease, 100 metres within your premises and your front doors have to close. And you sit there and you think logically, well, I didn't necessarily had COVID-19 at my doorstep, but I had to close for business. And I, for one, I'm certainly interested to see what the outcome of this case is going to be. What I do know, because I've started seeing it already, is the amount of no-win, no-fee lawyers that are popping up so quickly saying business interruption insurance, we will look at your policy for free, we will evaluate your position for free. I mean, going back to this case, because, you know, this case is really going to be a defining exercise for lots and lots of people, rippling down the sector from the lawyers to the actual business owners to the insurance companies, lots of people involved. So when we look at it, can we say this test case that took place, what happened? Who won and who lost? Was there an overall winner and a loser?
Broadly, I suspect the overall winners are the insured, are the businesses. So let me give you some examples of why the overall winners are the businesses. The businesses haven't completely won, depending on which policy one looks at. So the scheme of this judgment, and it's the judgment over about 150 pages.
My God, that's a big judgment.
That is why I was saying earlier that this is a breakneck speed that the judgment came out, because because of the urgency of the situation. And so it's the Financial Conduct Authority against Arch Insurance Limited and others, and there are a number of major insurance companies. And the way that the court was asked to answer questions was by grouping certain clauses in standard insurance policies and seeking the court's judgment in relation to the applicability of each different standard clause. And so the defendants, as well as the claimant, the FCA, alighted upon about 20 or 30 standard clauses in the average business interruption policy. And
God, I mean, this stuff is so long-winded, isn't it? I mean, if you own a business, you've got let's just assume you own a business, you've got business interruption insurance in your policy, and you're sitting there thinking, what does this mean for me?
Yeah. And I fear that this is one of those examples of lack of accessibility to the ordinary person.
Absolutely.
I can tell you that I've had difficulty in going through the 150-odd pages and then understanding it, then going back to it and then understanding it again. The average person and the busy business owner, of course, does not have the time. And therefore, this is one of those cases, I'm afraid, where even though the law should be readily accessible to the average man and woman on the street, it isn't.
That's why we do Get Legally Speaking, Salish, to try and make it accessible. And that's what we try and do here.
Let's hope in the next few minutes I can at least summarise some of the key features of what this judgment means for the average business. So the starting point for the judgment was whether you have a business interruption clause in your insurance policy. If you don't, that's the end of the story.
Yeah.
And therefore, you're not covered by this case. If you do, the next question is, was your business forced to close by the regulations and the Act, or did you choose to close? Because, of course, not every business was required to close, and not every business was covered by the legislation. So the way the legislation worked is that specific businesses were named. So cinemas, for example, were named the business that had to close. And therefore, if a cinema has business interruption clause, then they get to the next stage of the argument. But a number of businesses weren't named. And so some manufacturing businesses weren't named. And therefore, the question for the court was, are they covered by the business interruption clause? And I'm afraid the simple answer, it's a little more complex than the judgment is, if you were not required by law to close, then you are not likely to be part of the clause that covers you.
So as the person on the street who owns a business, where would they go to find out, was my type of business listed as a business that needed to close?
Yeah, I'm afraid the starting point and the best part is to look at the case itself. And I'm sure at the end of this we can give a reference to the case so that the ordinary person can read it. There are lots of summaries of this case available as well. The alternative is to look at the coronavirus
at the legislation.
The regulation.
Yeah.
Then you'd have to look at the schedules, and there are a number of schedules which are referred to. And if your business falls within one of those schedules, then I'm afraid you had to close, and therefore the good news is you're covered. If you don't fall in the schedule, then you're not covered and you did have to close as a business.
Yeah. Okay. So to make it absolutely clear, the court had decided that if your business was not requested to close as a result of the lockdown and you chose to close your business, then you are not going to be covered by a business interruption policy.
Exactly. Let me give you an example. And then I'll sort of add a layer of complexity to it. So if your business is a restaurant, that's a very easy example, then you had to close. There's no question about it. And therefore, if you are covered by business interruption clause, and I'll deal with the details of the clauses in a moment, the way the judgment comes about, then you are likely to be covered and you go to the next stage of the judgment. Layer of complexity. What if you have a restaurant business, but you also do takeaway food?
Yes.
What, as a result of COVID-19, you closed the restaurant part of your business because there was just no footfall in the high street.
Well, you weren't allowed to open anyway.
Well, But you've discovered, as any good business would, that people want takeaways now, because all restaurants are forced to close. So you gear up your restaurant side of the business. Then are you covered? Now, again, as you'd appreciate, each case depends on its own facts. If you were just a restaurant, full stop, then you get to the next stage of the judgment and you're likely to be covered by the clause. But if most of your business, predominant part of your business, was the takeaway, then the regulations didn't require you to close, and in fact you're doing better than you were. And therefore, if you say, we closed our takeaway business, well, the chances are the insurance company would say, we're not going to cover you.
That's a tough one, Salish. That's really tough. Because say, for example, and I know we're using examples here, but I've seen it in my local high street, where restaurants that really aren't takeaway, they're sort of, you know, like the cafe style restaurants. They are, you go there, you sit down, you eat. They've all of a sudden built a little shop front at the entrance and been serving people they've geared up, as you say, to do takeaway to keep some sort of work going. But they would never make the money that they would had they been able to open their front doors. What happens then? So you've continued to trade as a takeaway because you're trying to keep something alive, but you are down massively, or any percentage wise, on your turnover.
And the court deals with that sort of example. And so the example the court gives, very similar to yours, is predominantly that the restaurant is a sit-down restaurant. It's got a very small side business in takeaway. In that sort of situation, and if you're covered by a business interruption clause, then you're safe because your restaurant business closed. The fact that you then geared up your takeaway business, well, the courts have decided that that was a de minimis, a small business. You then geared it up, and that's now new business. It is not your old restaurant business.
It's not what you've been doing historically in your business. Well, that's very good. I mean, I have to say, I'll be honest with you, I don't know how we're going to get anything much more into this podcast. We've got a few minutes left. Are you free every week for about half an hour, Salish? Let's try and get to the next point, because we're in the middle of some really key things here and I don't just want to chop it off. So let's try and do our best to see if we can finish this point somehow.
Okay. So one of the points you raised is, well, the business interruption clause you have or have come across says, well, you've got to have someone with COVID-19 within a certain geographical area. Most of the clauses that the court dealt with had a geographical limit or 15 miles. And what the clauses said is that if you've got an infectious disease within your 15-mile area, then you're covered. And so the insurance companies were saying, aha, well, gotcha, because if you've not had a diagnosed case within that 15-mile area, but in fact you closed because the government closed down the country, then too bad, you're not covered. The court says, no, not so fast, because when you read the clause in the way it was intended by the parties, when there were parties who would have been contracting, they must have had in mind, not just within the 15-mile radius, but nationally as well, that affects the 15 miles as well, and that the parties contracting, the insured as well as insurer, could not have expected there to be a positive diagnosis within the 50-mile radius. The fact that the whole of the country and within the 15 miles is closed down because of the concerns throughout the country of the spread of SARS and COVID-19 is enough for the insurance clause to be triggered.
Well, this, one of the things that I certainly haven't seen in the policies that I've looked at, and I haven't looked at a lot, but I've looked at a few, is I haven't seen a single policy yet that says, should the government shut down your business due to, and whatever that due to may have been. Am I right in saying that that doesn't really exist? No insurance, although insurance companies spend tirelessly pages and pages of having every line by line point included, every situation, every scenario. One thing I've not seen is them actually considering government shutdowns, because, I mean, it certainly never happened in my lifetime, a shutdown. Is that right? Have you seen any, Salish, that say that if the government shuts your business down, you're covered?
Actually, yes, and this is the reason. The average insurance policy does not have clauses of that sort. However, the average business interruption clause in the average business insurance policy intend to have a clause like that. And so the court, in fact, dealt with a number of standard clauses that the big insurance companies, Zurich and Hiscox, and so on, and also Arch Insurance Company and Argenta, all of them had these standard insurance clauses which talked about an authority closing down or requiring the closing down or restricting access to the property insured.
I've read restricting access, but I've never saw anything that said, you know, if the government orders a shutdown. I guess I was looking for that kind of terminology because that's how we referred to, you know, the business is closing. It was a shutdown. When I think of local authority, for me, it kind of feels like, oh, the council come and said, sorry, but you have to shut your doors for business. So, but that obviously, we're saying, falls into what happened.
You're right. Because most of these clauses were designed for example, rat infestation.
Not COVID-19, then.
Or the local authority closes it down, then you might be covered. And so you're absolutely right. Of course, none of these insurance clauses could have anticipated a national lockdown of this sort. And therefore, the court had to extrapolate some of the wording. And so you're absolutely right, Patty, that The wording does not say specifically if there's a national lockdown by government.
Yes.
But the use of the words in the clauses can very easily be extrapolated, and the court had no difficulty in extrapolating in favour of the insured.
Well, I have to say, Shailesh, we probably didn't cover 25% of what we intended to in this podcast. So I will be booking you into my diary if you would so be so kind as to come back for part two, because lots of people are looking out for this information. And, you know, one of the things that I don't think, as you quite rightly said, I mean, no one off the street, no consumer is going to go and try and read a 150-page court judgment, because in the first instance, if you're not legally trained, that could be quite challenging in itself. And secondly, you've got to have the time and the will of God to do it. So I think that this is going to be incredibly useful to those seeking some answers and information on business interruption insurance, because more so in even the next 6 months, because those that have been able to survive in business due to government support, the next 6 months is going to see a huge reduction of government support, as the government's been talking about the end of furlough. You know, the bounce back loan was one thing. OK, they're trying to help in other ways, but you're talking about a country that's trying to economically survive.
Well, interestingly, as early as February, the insurance companies, their representatives, met up with government. As early as February. Before.
Really?
And the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, after the first of those meetings, said, we think because of other aspects of government policy and having met the insurance companies' representatives, we think businesses will be safe. There was then a further meeting, and the Chancellor and the Prime Minister said the insurance companies are going to do the right thing by their insured. That was in February and March. And of course, then we have the June case when certainly some of the insured would have said that the insurance companies didn't do the right thing.
Yes. No, I have to say, I did hear the Chancellor at some point in one of the speeches, because there's obviously been so many now, saying, you know, insurance companies will have to support this system and what's going on, but we're yet to see it. And I certainly, for one, think that insurance companies have to bear some of the burden of helping and assisting. It's just it's the most gut-wrenching thing with any insurance policy. When you've got an insurance policy and you think, well, I'm covered. Whatever it is for, I'm covered. And then you go to make a claim, which is usually, I don't think insurance claims are made in happy circumstances in life. Let's put it that way. Whether it's business insurance or home contents insurance or car insurance, you're usually making a claim in a situation that's been stressful or distressing or unpleasant. And then you're told, well, sorry, you're not covered. And for something so important as this, which comes down to people's livelihoods, it is gut-wrenching. So, you know,
business, it is an existential problem. But of course, from the insurance company's perspective, the number of claims and the size of claims that may make an existential problem for the insurance companies as well, which is why It is, in my view, more likely than not that this case will be appealed all the way to the Supreme Court.
Well, it's only stage one, isn't it, Salish? So I think it's really important for everybody to understand that there are further stages to come to this test case before everybody can run off and say, ah, the law says this, this is my policy, where's the nearest lawyer, please can I make a claim? If the, well, the insurance companies may then start paying out without too much of an argument, but we're yet to see. But part two, I'll be booking you in as soon as I press stop record on here. So thank you so much for joining me today, Salish. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.